My name is Brian Moore. I will be doing a session on the poetry of Robert Service, poems of War and Peace. In particular, I'll be concentrating on poems from the winter section of his book, Ballads of a Bohemian. I don't intend to read the more popular poems such as Cremation of Sam McGee and the Ballad of One-Eyed Mike, etc., because I think people know those ones, and I want to paint another picture of Robert Service tonight that perhaps you haven't seen before, or in this case, I suppose, heard before. I intend to give a bit of history about Robert Service as well, and in the collection of his poems that I have here, there are also little bits and pieces of dialogue that give us some insights into Robert Service's thinking about war and peace. So, I think I'll just start with a bit of history, and I expect, you know, people are going to roll in, so just have a good time. Robert William Service, born in 1874 in Preston, England, died 1958 in France, according to one account. In his own account, he mentions that he was American-born, and I haven't done enough research yet to figure out, well, is he actually American-born, or is he feeling like he's actually Canadian? But in the little paragraph about him at the beginning of this book, he says he's born in Preston, England, so we'll just go with that for now. He grew up and was educated in Glasgow in Scotland, and he worked in Glasgow as a bank clerk. I knew when I spent some time in Glasgow, and even at that time I was really in love with Robert Service's poetry, and I knew there was something about Glasgow I really liked, and it must be because Robert Service walked the same streets, and I probably went to the bank that he worked at, for all I know. Robert Service held various jobs, both in the U.S. and in Canada, as a bank clerk. He worked as a bank clerk in Dawson and Whitehorse, Canada, up in the Yukon. I've also been there, driving up to Alaska. A lot of the experiences he had working in the Yukon gave him ideas for his ballads that he wrote. The Ballad of the Northern Lights, for example. Robert Service has also been to England, he's been to Mexico, been to Turkey, been all over the place, Alaska. In a lot of ways, we've lived similar lives. I've done a lot of traveling around myself, and I always wonder, is it Robert Service, has he influenced my life, you know, through his poetry, or do I like his poetry because he's lived a similar life to the way I've been living? I don't know. That's maybe not important to answer that. Anyway, he's had so many different sorts of work experiences, and that's given him material for all the various types of poems which he's written. In particular, tonight, I'm going to focus on the poems from Ballad of a Bohemian, and the experiences which gave him the material for these particular poems come from, he was an ambulance driver for the French for part of the First World War, and later on he served in the Red Cross. So he's had a lot of experience. He never actually took part in the actual, you know, in the infantry, but he was always in a helping position, wanting to serve somehow, to help those who were wounded. Robert Service also wrote a whole book of poems called Rhymes of a Red Cross Man, in which he talks more and more about his experiences during the First World War. Anyway, I'm going to start with a bit of prose that he's written. It's entitled Catastrophe, and it's written when he was in Brittany, August 14th, 1914. And now I fear I must write in another strain. Up to this time I have been too happy. I have existed in a magic Bohemia, largely of my own making. Hope, faith, enthusiasm have been mine. Each day has had its struggle, its failure, its triumph. However, that is all ended. During the past week, we have lived breathlessly. For in spite of the exultant sunshine, our spirits have been under a cloud, a deepening shadow of horror and calamity, war. Even as I write, in our little village, steeple bells are ringing madly, and in every little village steeple all over the land. As he hears it, the harvester checks his scythe on the swing, the clerk throws down his pen, the shopkeeper puts up his shutters. Only in the cafes there is a clamor of voices and a drowning of care. For here every man must fight, every home give tribute. There is no question, no appeal. By heredity and discipline, all minds are shaped to this great hour. So tomorrow each man will seek his barracks and become a soldier as completely as if he had never been anything else. With the same docility as he dons his baggy red trousers, will he let some muddle-headed general hurl him to destruction for some dubious gain. Today a father, a homemaker, tomorrow fodder for cannon. So they all go without hesitation, without bitterness, and the great military machine that knows not humanity swings them to their fate. I marvel at the sense of duty, the resignation, the sacrifice. And the women, those who wait and weep. Ah, today I have not seen one who did not weep. Yes, one. She was very old, and she stood by her garden gate with her hand on the uplifted latch. As I passed, she looked at me with eyes that did not see. She had no doubt sons and grandsons who must fight. And she had good reason, perhaps, to remember the war of, I don't speak French, but 60 D or whatever, 60-something. When I passed an hour later, she was still there, her hand on the uplifted latch. You'll have to forgive my trying to pronounce the French. If it isn't a reason, I could do it, but I don't speak French. Okay, then August 30th. The men have gone. Only remain graybeards, women, and children. Calvert, a friend of Robert Services, and I have been helping our neighbors to get in the harvest. No doubt we aid, but there, with the old men and children, there is a sense of uneasiness and even shame that comes over me. I would like to return to Paris, but the railway is mobilized. Each day I grow more discontented. Up there in the Red North, great things are doing, and I am out of it. I am thoroughly unhappy. Then Calvert comes to me with a plan. He has a Ford car. We will all three go to Paris. He intends to offer himself and his car to the Red Cross. His wife will nurse. So we are very happy at the solution, and tomorrow we are off. First poem I'll read is a poem. Actually, there's a bit more of a paragraph I'm going to give you. I want to kind of give you an idea of Robert Service's thinking. The up-tilted countryside is a checkered board of green and gray, and except where groves of trees rise like islands, cultivated to the last acre. But as we near the firing line, all efforts to till the land cease, and the ungathered beets of last year have grown to seed. Amid rank, unkempt fields, I race over a road that is pitted with obus holes. I pass a line of guns painted like snakes and drawn by horse-dyed khaki color. Then soldiers coming from the trenches, mud-caked and ineffably weary. Then a race over a bit of road that is exposed. Then, buried in the hillside, the dressing station. The two wounded are put into my car. From hip to heel, one is swathed in bandages. The other has a great white turban on his head, with a red patch on it that spreads and spreads. They stare dully, but make no sound. As I crank the car, there is a shrill screaming noise. About 30 yards away, I hear an explosion like a mine blast, followed by a sudden belch of coal-black smoke. I stare at it in a dazed way. Then the doctor says, "Don't trouble to analyze your sensations. Better get off. You're only drawing their fire." Here is one of my experiences. And this is a poem entitled Casualty. That boy I took in the car last night with the body that awfully sagged away and the lips blood crisped and the eyes flame bright. and the poor hands folded and cold as clay. All I've thought, and I've thought of him all the day. For the weary old doctor says to me, "It'll only last for an hour or so. Both of his legs below the knee, blown off by a bomb. So lad, go slow, and please remember, he doesn't know." So I tried to drive with never a jar, and there was I cursing the road like mad, when I hears a ghost of a voice from the car. "Tell me, old chap, have I copped it bad?" So I answers, "No," and he says, "I'm glad." "Glad," says he, "for at 22, life's so splendid, I hate to go. There's so much good that a chap might do. And I've fought from the start, and I've suffered so. 'Twould be hard to get knocked out now, you know." "Forget it," says I. Then I drove a while, and I passed him a cheery word or two, but he didn't answer for many a mile. So just as the hospital hove in view, says I, "Is there nothing that I can do?" Then he opens his eyes, and he smiles at me, and he takes my hand in his trembling hold. "Thank you. You're far too kind," says he. "I'm awfully comfy. Stay. Let's see. I fancy my blankets come unrolled. My feet. Please wrap them. They're cold. They're cold." Some more text. "There is a city that glitters on the plain. Afar off we can see its tall cathedral spire. And there we often take our wounded, from the little village hospitals to the railhead." Tragic little buildings, these emergency hospitals, town halls, churches, schools. Their cots are never empty, their surgeons never still. So every day we get our list of cases and off we go, a long line of cars swishing through the mud. Then one by one we branch off to our village hospital, puzzling out the road on our maps. Arrived there, we load up quickly. The wounded make no moan, they lie limp, heavily bandaged, with bare legs and arms protruding from their blankets. They do not know where they are going, they do not care. Like livestock, they are labeled and numbered. An orderly brings along their battle-scarred equipment, throwing open their rifles to see that no charge remains. Sometimes they shake our hands and thank us for the drive. In the streets of the city, I see French soldiers wearing the fourragère. It is a cord of green, yellow, or red, and corresponds to the Cross of War, or the Military Medal, and the Legion of Honor. The red is the highest of all, and has been granted only to one or two regiments. This incident was told to me by a man who saw it, and this poem is entitled "The Blood Red Fourragère." I hope, if for someone who speaks French, maybe you can pronounce it for me. But anyway, what was the blackest sight to me of all that campaign? A naked woman tied to a tree with jagged holes where her breast should be, rotting there in the rain. On we pressed to the battle fray, dogged and dour and spent. Sudden I heard my captain say, "Voila! Couture has passed this way and left us a monument." So I looked and I saw our colonel there, and his grand head snowed with the years. Unto the beat of the rain was bare, and oh, there was grief in his frozen stare, and his cheeks were stung with tears. Then at last he turned from the woeful tree, and his face like stone was set. "Go, march the regiment past," said he, "that every father and son may see, and none may ever forget." Oh, the crimson strands of her hair down poured over her breasts of woe, and our grim old colonel leaned on his sword. And the men filed past with their rifles lowered, solemn and sad and slow. But I'll never forget till the day I die, as I stood in the driving rain, and the jaded columns of men slouched by, how amazement leapt into every eye, then fury and grief and pain. And some would like madmen stand aghast, with their hands upclenched to the sky. And some would cross themselves as they passed, and some would curse in a scalding blast, and some, like children, cry. Yeah, some would be sobbing and some would pray and some hurl hateful names. But the best had never a word to say. They turned their twitching faces away and their eyes were like hot flames. They passed. Then down on his bended knee, the colonel dropped to the dead. Poor martyred daughter of France, said he. Oh, dearly, dearly avenged you'll be, or ever a day be sped. Now they hold that we are the best of the best, and each of our men may wear like a gash of crimson across his chest, as one fierce proved in the battle test, the blood-red Fourragère. For each as he leaps to the top can see, like an etching of blood in his brain, a wife or a mother lashed to a tree, with two black holes where her breast should be, left to rot in the rain. So we fight like fiends, and of us they say that we neither yield nor spare, or we have the bitterest debt to pay. Have we paid it? Look how we wear today like a trophy, gallant and proud and gay, our blood-red Fourragère. This next poem is entitled Jim. Never knew Jim, do you? Our boy Jim, bless you, there was a likely lad. Supple and straight and long of limb, clean as a whistle and just as glad. Always laughing, wasn't he, Dad? Joy, pure joy to the heart of him, and oh, but the soothing ways he had, Jim, our Jim. But I see him best as a tiny tot, a bonny babe, though it's me that speaks, laughing there in his little cot, with his sunny hair and his apple cheeks, and my, but the blue, blue eyes he'd got, and just where his wee mouth dimpled dim, such a fairy mark like a beauty spot, that was Jim. But the war, how my eyes were wet. But he says, don't be soldering, mother dear. You never knew me to fail you yet. And I'll be back in a year, a year. 'Twas at Mons he fell in the first attack. For so they said, and their eyes were dim. But I laughed in their faces. He'll come back, will my Jim. Now, we've been wedded for 20 years, and Jim was the only one we'd had. So when I whispered in Father's ear, he wouldn't believe me, would you, Dad? There, I must hurry. Hear him cry? My new little baby. See, that's him. What are we going to call him? Why, Jim. Just Jim. Jim! For look at him laughing there, in the same old way as his tiny cot, with his rosy cheeks and his sunny hair, and look, just look, his beauty spot. In the self-same place, oh, I can't explain, and of course you think it's a mother's whim, but I know it's my boy again, same wee Jim. Just come back as he said he would, come with his love and his heart of glee. Oh, I cried and I cried, but the Lord was good. From the shadow of death he set Jim free. So I'll have him all over again, you see. Can you wonder my mother's heart's abrim? Oh, how happy we're going to be, aren't we, Jim? Some more text. We have just had one of our men killed, a young sculptor of immense promise. When one thinks of all the fine work he might have accomplished, it seems a shame. But after all, tomorrow it may be the turn of any of us. If it should be mine, my chief regret will be for work undone. I often think of how I will go back to the quarter and take up the old life again. How sweet it will all seem. But first I must earn the right. And if ever I do go back, how I will find Bohemia changed, missing how many a face. It was in thinking of our lost comrade I wrote the following, and this poem is entitled The Three Tommies. That Barrett, the painter of pictures, what feeling for color he had, and Fanning, the maker of music, such melodies mirthful and mad, and Harley, the writer of stories so whimsical, tender, and glad. To hark in their talk in the trenches, high heart and unfolding to heart. Of the day when the war would be over, and each would be true to his part. Upbuilding a palace of beauty to the wonder and glory of art. Jans Barrett, the painter of pictures, yon carcass that rots in the wire. His hand with its sensitive cunning is crisped to a cinder with fire. His eyes with their magical vision are bubbles of glutinous mire. Poor Fanning, he sought to discover the symphonic note of his shell. There are bits of him broken and bloody to show you the place where he fell. I reason to fear on his exquisite here, the rats have been banqueting well. And speaking of Harley, the writer, I fancy I looked on him last, sprawling and staring and writhing in a roar of the battle blast. Then a mad gun team crashed over and scattered his brains as it passed. Oh, Harley and Fanning and Barrett, they were bloody good mates of mine. Their bodies are empty bottles. Death has guzzled the wine. What's left of them's filth and corruption? Where is the fire divine? I'll tell you, at night in the trenches as I watch and I do my part, three radiant spirits I'm seeing, high heart revealing to heart. And they're building a peerless palace to the splendor and triumph of art. Yet alas for the fame of Barrett, the glory he might have trailed. And alas for the name of Fanning, a star that beaconed and paled. Poor Harley, obscure and forgotten, well, who shall say that they failed? No, each did a something grander than ever he dreamed to do. And as for the work unfinished, all will be paid their due. The broken ends will be fitted, the balance struck will be true. So painters and players and penmen, I'll tell you, do as you please. Let your fame outleap on the trumpets, you'll never rise up to these, to three grim and gory Tommies, down, down on your bended knees. Over the spine of the ridge, a horned moon of reddish hue peers through the splintered, hag-like trees. Where the trenches are, rockets are rising, green and red. I hear the coughing of the Maxims, the peevish nagging of the rifles, the boom of a heavy and the hollow sound of its exploding shell. Running the car into the shadow of a ruined house, I try to sleep. But a battery starts to blaze away close by, and the flame lights up my shelter. Near me some soldiers are in deep slumber. One stirs in his sleep as a big rat runs over him. And I know by experience that when one is sleeping, a rat feels as heavy as a sheep. But how can one possibly sleep? Out there in the dark, there is the wild tattoo of a thousand rifles, and hark! That dull roar is the explosion of a mine. There, the purring of the rapid firers, desperate things are doing. There will be lots of work for me before this thing is over. What a cursed place. As I cannot sleep, I think of a story I heard today. It is of a Canadian colonel, and in my mind I shape it like this. As I read this poem, take note of the comrade that accompanies this fellow on his mission. This poem is entitled His Voice. I'm going, Billy, old fellow. Hist, lad, don't make any noise. There's botches to beat all creation. The pitch of a bomb away. I've fixed the note to your collar. You've got to get back to my boys. You've got to get back to warn 'em before it's the break of day. The order came to go forward to a trench line traced on the map. I knew the brass hats had blundered. I knew, and I told them so. I knew if I did as they ordered, I would tumble into a trap. And I tried to explain, but the answer came like a pistol. Go. Then I thought of the boys I commanded. I always called them my boys, the men of my own recruiting, the lads of my countryside, tested in many a battle. I knew their sorrows and joys, and I loved them like a father with more than a father's pride. To march my boys to a shambles as soon as the dawn of day, to see them helplessly slaughtered. If all that I guessed was true, my boys that trusted me blindly, I thought and I tried to pray, and then I arose and I muttered, it's either them or it's you. I rose and I donned my raincoat. I buckled my helmet tight. I remember you watched me, Billy, as I took my cane in my hand. I vaulted over the sandbags into the pitchy night, into the pitted valley that served us as no man's land. I strode out over the hollow of hate and havoc and death. From the heights the guns were angry with a vengeful snarling of steel. And once in a moment of stillness I heard hard panting breath, and I turned. It was you, old rascal, following hard on my heel. I fancy I cursed you, Billy, but not so much as I ought. And so we went forward together till we came to the valley rim. And then a star shell sputtered. It was even worse than I thought, for the trench they told me to move in was packed with Boche to the brim. They saw me too, and they got me. They peppered me till I fell, and there I scribbled my message with my lifeblood ebbing away. Now, Billy, you fat old duffer, you've got to get back like hell and get them to cancel that order before it's the dawn of day. Billy, old boy, I love you. I kiss your shiny black nose. Now home there, hurry, you devil, or I'll cut you to ribbons. See? Poor brute, he's off, and I'm dying. I go as a soldier does. I'm happy. My boys, God bless 'em. It had to be them or me. Two friends that Robert Service mentions in this text, McBean and a fellow named Saxon Dane, two fellows that Robert Service hung out with a lot on the boulevard in Paris. They were all three poets, and they did a lot of writing together and exchanging ideas and criticizing each other and over glasses of ale, I suppose. He mentions McBean and Saxon Dane in this short paragraph. Today I heard that McBean had been killed in Belgium. I believe he turned out a wonderful soldier. Saxon Dane, too, has been missing for 2 months. We all know what that means. It is odd how one gets callous to death, a medieval callousness, when we hear that the best of our friends have gone west. We have a moment of the keenest regret, but how soon again we find the heart to laugh. The saddest part of loss, I think, is that one so soon gets over it. Is it that we fail to realize it all? Is it that it seems a strange and hideous dream from which we will awake and rub our eyes? Oh, how bitter I feel as the days go by. It is creeping more and more into my verse. Read this. And this is a poem entitled Bonehead Bill. I wonder who and what he was. This is written with kind of a Scottish or Glaswegian brogue. I'm no expert on the Glaswegian, only from having been there for a while. So this is my interpretation of the way a Glaswegian would read this. Bonehead Bill. I wonder who and what he was. That un I got so slick, I couldn't see his face because the night was hideous thick. I just made out among the black a blinking wedge of white, then biff. I guess I got him, crack, the man I killed last night. I wonder if account of me some wench will go unwed, and heaps of lives will never be because he's stark and dead. Or if his missus damns the war, and by some candlelight two-headed kids are praying for the fritz I copped last night. I wonder, struth, I wonder why I had that awful dream. I saw up in the giddy sky the gates o' God agleam. I saw the gates o' heaven shine with everlasting light, and then I knew that I'd got mine. as easy God is last night. I bang beyond the brooding mists where spawn the mother stars. I amateured with me bloody fists upon them golden bars. I amateured till a devil's doubt fair froze me with affright to think what God would say about the bloke I corpsed last night. I hushed, I wilted with despair when, like a rosy flame, I sees an angel standing there who calls me by me name. He had such soft, such shiny eyes. He held his and smiled, and through the gates of paradise he led me like a child. He led me by them golden palms what hems that jeweled street, and seraphs was a singing psalms you've no idea how sweet, with cherubs crowding closer round than peas is in a pod. He led me to a shiny mound where beams the throne of God. And then I hears God's weary voice, Bill again, have no fear, stand up and glory and rejoice for him who led you ere. And in a nip I seem to see, I like a flash of light, my angel pal I knew to be the chap I plugged last night. Now I don't claim to understand, they calls me Bonehead Bill. They shows me a rifle in me and show me how to kill. Me job's to risk me life and limb, but be it wrong or right, this cross I'm making, it's for him, the cove I croaked last night. The registrar is Robert, right? Mm-hmm. He grew up in Glasgow for a while, so I'll have to have him come and tell me how to speak Glaswegian. When I was in Glasgow, this place I was staying, this roommate of mine was, took me 2 weeks to be able to understand the guy. It's a totally different form of English than I'm used to, but I love it. I like to go back to Glasgow and learn how to really speak it, so I can come back to Holden Village and totally fool everybody, make them think I'm from Scotland, you know? This is some more text. I never was intended for a job like this. I realize it more and more every day, but I will stick it out till I break down, to be nervous, over-imaginative, terribly sensitive to suffering. Is a poor equipment for the man who starts out to drive wounded on the battlefield. I am haunted by the thought that my car may break down when I have a load of wounded. Once indeed it did, and a man died while I waited for help. Now I never look at what is given me. It might unnerve me. I have been at it for over 6 months without a rest. When an attack has been going on, I have worked day and night, until, as I drove, I wanted to fall asleep at the wheel. The winter has been trying. There is rain one day, frost the next, mud up to the axles. One sleeps in lousy barns or dripping dugouts, cold, hunger, dirt. I know them all singly and together. My only consolation is that the war must soon be over, and that I will have help. When I have time and am not too tired, I comfort myself with scribbling. This poem is entitled The Booby Trap. I'm crawling out in the mangles to bury what's left of Joe. Joe, my pal, and a good 'un. God, how it rains and rains. I'm sick of seeing him lying like a heap of offal, and so I'm crawling out in the beet field to bury his last remains. He might have been making munitions, yet no need to go. And I tells him straight, but he answers, 'tain't no use chewing the fat. I've got to be doing me duty with the rest of the boys, and so yon's him, yon blob on the beet field, what I'm trying so hard to get at. There was five of us lads from the brickyard. Henry was gassed at Bompon. Sidney was drowned in a crater. Herbert was halved by a shell. Joe was the pick of the posse. I'd have been safely at home. Only son of his mother. They're a widow as well. She used to sell bobbins and buttons at a place near the Waterloo Road. A little old bent over lady with glasses and silvery hair. Must tell her I planted him nicely. Cheer her up like. Well, I'm blowed. That bullet near catched me biffer. I'll see the old gill if I'm spared. She'll take it to her heart, poor old lady, for she was her hope and her joy. His dad used to drink like a knothole. She kept the home going, she did. She pinched and she scraped for his schooling. He was such a fine and handsome boy. All Flanders seems packed on me panties. He's handsome no longer, poor kid. This bit o' a border I'm packing and dragging a ruined in the mire. I was tickled to death when I found it, says I. Here's a nice little glow. I was chilled and wet through to the marrer, so I started to make me a fire. And then I says, no here, go blimey, it'll do for a cross for Joe. Well, here he is, gowd, how one changes a lion 6 weeks in the rain. Joe, me old pal, how I'm sorry, so help me, I wish I could pray. And now I had best get a dig in his grave, it seems more like a drain. And I hopes that the botches won't get me till I gets him safe planted away. As he touches the body, there is a tremendous explosion. He falls back shattered. A booby trap! Ought to have known it, if that's not a bastardly trick. Well, one thing, I won't be going. Gawd, I'm a hell of a sight. Wish I died fighting and killing, that's what it makes me sick. Ah, Joe, we'll be pushing up daisies together, old chummy. Good night. Next poem was entitled Michael. And it describes a son coming home and engaged in conversation with his mother after the war. Michael. There's something in your face, Michael. I've seen it all the day. There's something queer that wasn't there when you first went away. It's just the army life, mother, the drill, the left and right, that puts the stiffening in your spine and locks your jaw up tight. There's something in your eyes, Michael, and how they stare and stare. You're looking at me now, me boy, as if I wasn't there. It's just the things I've seen, mother, the sights that come and come. A bit of broken bloody pope that used to be a chum. There's something on your heart, Michael, that makes you wake at night. And often when I hear you moan, I tremble in me fright. It's just a man I killed, mother, a mother's son like me. It seems he's always haunting me. He'll never let me be. But maybe he was bad, Michael. Maybe it was right to kill the enemy you hate in fair and honest fight. I did not hate at all, mother. He never did me harm. I think he was a lad like me who worked upon a farm. And what's it all about, Michael? Why did you have to go? A quiet, peaceful lad like you, and we were happy so. It's them that's up above, mother. It's them that sits and rules. We've got to fight the wars they make. It's us as are the fools. And what will be the end, Michael? And what's the use, I say, of fighting if whoever wins, it's us that's got to pay? Oh, it will be the end, mother, when lads like him and me, that swear to feed the ones above, decide that we'll be free. And when will that day come, Michael? And when will fightin' cease? And simple folks may till their soil and live in love and peace. It's coming soon and soon, mother, it's nearer every day, when only men who work and sweat will have a word to say. When all who earn their honest bread in every land and toil will claim the brotherhood of man, the comradeship of toil. When we, the workers, all demand, what are we fighting for? Then we'll end that stupid crime, that devil's madness, war. This poem is entitled, Was It You? Hello, young Jones, with your tie so gay and your pen behind your ear. Will you mark my check in the usual way, for I am overdrawn, I fear. Then you look at me in a manner bland, as you turn your ledger's leaves.
and you hand it back with a soft white hand and the air of a man who grieves. Was it you, young Jones? Was it you I saw? And I think I see you yet, with a live bomb gripped in your grimy paw and your face to the parapet, with your lips a snarl and your eyes gone mad with a fury that thrilled you through. Oh, I look at you now and I think, my lad, was it you, young Jones, was it you? Hello, young Smith, with your well-fed look and your coat of dapper fit. Will you recommend me a decent book with nothing of war in it? Then you smile as you polish a fingernail and your eyes serenely roam, and you suavely hand me a thrilling tale by a man who stayed at home. Was it you, young Smith, was it you I saw in the battle's storm and stench, with a roar of rage and a wound red raw leap into the reeking trench, as you stood like a fiend on the firing shelf and you stabbed and hacked and slew? Oh, I look at you and I ask myself, was it you, young Smith, was it you? Hello, old Brown, with your ruddy cheek and your tummy's rounded swell, your garden's looking jolly chic and your kitty's awfully well. Then you beam at me in your cheery way as you swing your water can, and you mop your brow and you blithely say, what's about golf, old man? Was it you, old Brown, was it you I saw like a bulldog stick to your gun, a cursing devil of fang and claw, when the rest were on the run? Your eyes aflame with the battle hate as you sit in the family pew, and I see you rising to pass the plate. I ask, old Brown, was it you? Was it me and you? Was it you and me? Is that grammar or is it not? Who grovelled in filth and misery, who gloried and groused and fought. Which is the wrong and which is the right? Which is the false and the true? The man of peace or the man of fight? Which is the me and the you? This next was entitled, it's in French again, Le Grand Mutilé, Les Grands Mutilés, or something like that. Okay. I'll have to study French. I've done my work with Norwegian now. I saw three wounded of the war, and the first had lost his eyes, and the second went on wheels and had no legs below the thighs, and the face of the third was featureless, and his mouth ran cornerwise. So I made a rhyme about each one, and this is how my fancies run. The Sightless Man. Out of the night a crash, a roar, a rampart of light, a flame that leaped like a lash, searing forever my sight. Out of the night a flash, then, oh, forever the night. Here I sit in the dark, I who so love the sun, supple and strong and fit, in the dark till my days be done. Aye, that's the hell of it, stalwart and 21. Marie is staunch and true, willing to be my wife, swear she has eyes for two, aye, but it's long, is life. What is a lad to do with his heart and his brain at strife? There now, my pipe is out, no one to give me a light. I grope and I grope about, well, it is nearly night. Sleep may resolve my doubt, help me to reason right. He sleeps and dreams. I heard them whispering there by the bed, oh, but the ears of the blind are quick. Every treacherous word they said was a stab of pain, and my heart turned sick. Then lip met lip, and they looked at me, sitting bent by the fallen fire. And they laughed to think that I couldn't see, but I felt the flame of their hot desire. He's helping Marie to work the farm, a dashing, upstanding chap, they say. And look at me with my flabby arm and the fat of sloth and my face of clay. Look at me as I sit and sit by the side of a fire that's seldom lit, sagging and weary the livelong day, when everyone else is out of the field sowing the seed for a golden yield, or tossing around the new mown hay. Oh, the shimmering wheat that frets the sky, gold of plenty and blue of hope. I'm seeing it all with an inner eye as out of the door I grope and grope. And I hear my wife and her lover there, whispering, whispering round the thick, mocking me and my sightless stare as I fumble and fumble everywhere, slapping and tapping with my stick, old and weary at 31. Heartsick, wishing it all was done. Oh, I'll tap my way around to the byre, and I'll hear the cows as they chew their hay. There at last there is none to tire, there at least I am not in the way. And they'll look at me with their velvet eyes, and I'll stroke their flanks with my woman's hand, and they'll answer to me with soft replies, and somehow